Today is Monday, November 2nd, and you are listening to episode number 20 of the Just Nerd Stuff podcast, where we will bring you all the latest nerdy things to talk about. We promise. Scout's honor. My name is Corey, and these are... Well, I only have one co-host today, actually.
It's me, Jacob.
Today's spoiler review is The Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, a film where high school dreams come to life. And last week on TV, Supergirl finally takes flight. The question is it worth watching? I don't know. That's good.
I mean, I liked the pilot. I thought it was pretty impressive.
Actually, fun little thing for all of the listeners is that actually that was supposed to be our original review.
Yeah, that was supposed to be. Yeah, that was going to be our first review because we actually found the pilot leaked back in like late May, and we watched it. So we watched it like 6 months ago, and then but then we all kind of thought, man, maybe we should just wait until it actually comes out.
Yeah, because that was the time Jurassic World came out, and we were like, well, that's kind of reaching a bigger audience, and I think people would be more interested in listening to that. And then, you know, as time goes on, we actually got our structure down. We figured out what we wanted to do, and now here we are, and
yeah,
it's all set up very differently. So
it's a good thing I showed up today because Kurt's not here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and apologies to everybody. I know you were all looking for an episode last week, and push came to shove, and I talked to these guys, and I was like, so, Monday morning, let's do it. And we didn't really have a review last week set up, because there wasn't really anything good coming out last week.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure exactly what to grab, so I grabbed the first thing. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Let me rephrase that. We were supposed to do Attack on Titan. Parts 1 and 2, both of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were able to see them, but we ran out of time. And I was just like, okay, let's just make it simple. I found Tomorrowland. That came out recently. I was like, let's just watch Tomorrowland. So I sat and watched it. And I told the guys, go watch it. Well, they didn't. And Monday morning comes, and I'm like, all right, let's record. And then nobody's here. So I messaged them, and I'm like... So we're not recording then today?
Kurt wasn't even here?
No, he wasn't even here. He assumed that you came over and we recorded.
Oh, really?
And he's like, you guys record? I'm like, no. I'm like, why don't you watch the movie today? He's like, okay, I will.
I feel like he lost faith because like the 2 weeks prior I wasn't in the show.
I think a little bit, yeah.
Which was my fault. I was walking to my car. Funny story.
Uh-huh.
I was walking to my car on the way to the podcast, and then a madman in a blue box just appeared out of nowhere and said, come with me. And I was just like...
No time to argue. Get in the box.
Yeah, pretty much. Almost exactly, except without the accent.
Somehow the doctor went Mexican.
It was more Scottish. And
no time to argue. So, I can't do Scottish.
I jumped in the box, and then I came back 2 weeks later, and he said, and I said, dude, what the hell? And he's like, I said, I was supposed to be back in time for stuff. And he's like, he said, I promised 5 minutes. We can't be 2 weeks late. I said 5 minutes. And I'm like, dude, you serious?
You know, if I want to let you know, though, if you use that excuse again, I'm going to believe you. I'm going to believe you. Because, I mean, I have to believe that he exists. Speaking of him, look, it's a thing.
I'm the Doctor.
Where?
Where what?
Oh, it's werewolf.
Right here, on my list.
Oh.
Yeah. He can't see what I wrote. But what I wrote down was, they have officially announced from Big Finish Productions, the company that makes all the Doctor Who audio stories, they have officially announced 10th Doctor audio adventures.
Yay, with
it's
Donna,
about
right?
About time. Yes, with Donna.
I like Donna.
And I'm perfectly Donna. Okay with that. I think she is I don't want Rose around because I feel like she got whiny by the end. Like, you love me, Doctor. I want to be around. And like, did I care about the character when she was on? Yes. But looking back now, I'm like, I'd much rather have somebody that was a little more independent. And Donna was definitely more independent.
Yeah.
And she had that kind of fire that pushed against the Doctor, well, 10th Doctor, that I felt like was such a good chemistry, because while they butted heads, they also cared about each other. And I think that's what made them, in my opinion, the most interesting pairing of all of Tennant's companions.
Mm-hmm.
Even next to Wilfred, even though Wilfred was only around for what, that one or two episodes at the end.
Yeah.
And Wilf, I thought, was a really good character. I'd kind of like to see Martha come back, and yet I don't. it's kind of a tough call.
I liked season 3 with Martha.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or yeah, season, yeah, you're right. 3.
But yeah, they announced it out. It's going to start with an episode called Technophobia. There's another episode called Time Reaver, and then Death and the Queen. And that's all. This is all bundle number 1 of what they're planning on doing with these adventures. And of course, we still have adventures coming up with the War Doctor. Finally, we're getting some more things with the War Doctor. I want to know more. Give me more. They're also bringing in Alex Kingston to play River Song again. She's getting her own box set.
Yes.
And she's going to be part of the 8th Doctor story, Doom Coalition 2, which is very intriguing to me, because she's in the story, and yet technically she's not supposed to meet him yet. So what inclusion does she have? But yeah, it's like I said before, when we announced the War Doctor stories, you know, it was only a matter of time until they did current Doctor stories.
Yeah, I want some Matt Smith stories, though.
I swear that's next.
That would be so
awesome. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm dreaming of the day where we get 11th Doctor stories and just Amy.
Yeah.
I just want 11 and Amy. Rory, don't get me wrong. I love Rory. I like having Rory in. But the team up of Matt Smith and Karen Gillan was the fantastic pairing, in my opinion. And we only had them together by themselves for like maybe 5 or 6 episodes.
Yeah. And those were like, that was like right the first half of season 5. And season 5 is like by far the best season.
If anybody listening has never watched Doctor Who, or maybe like dabbled in it, go watch season 5. Start right from there. You get everything you really need to know. As much as I hate saying skip over Tennant, because Tennant is my favorite Doctor, the season 5 sets up everything the way you need it to be. And trust me, you will love the show after watching season 5.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm not saying it has great moments all the time. I mean, it has some moments in it. But as a whole, as a payoff, emotional payoff for a whole season, that season was top notch.
Yeah, and I mean, I've started several different people out on in the beginning of season 5, and then they just finished it off and then went back and started from season 1 and worked their way forward and then watched season 6, and it worked out. They loved it.
Yeah.
Everyone I ever showed the first episode of season 5 to, they loved it.
Yeah, because if you show them the 2005 reboot, the very first episode, even for myself, I was like, this is a cultural phenomenon? The heck is this?
It was really cheesy.
I mean, that it didn't stop me from being curious and wanting to go forward, but I didn't really start becoming a fan until the 3rd season. Mm-hmm. After I watched Blink, I was like, okay, I'm diehard now. This is fantastic. But yeah, go check it out, everybody. I'm going to probably be pre-ordering these 10th Doctor stories because I've been earning for them. I didn't want them out.
I'm not really an audio drama kind of guy, because I'll probably like fall asleep if I'm sitting there listening to it.
No, it's...
But, well, I don't know.
I've even found myself, like, it is tough for me to just like sit in a chair and listen to them. I do find myself either having to listen into a car if I'm on a long drive. You can focus on driving and still listen to them, but also like maybe if I'm walking to work or something.
Mm.
Like, they're really good to pass the time that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in that sense, that works. I have sat down and actually just straight listened to them, but it's a little tougher. I agree, though. Like,
yeah. I mean, I really want to listen to some of the 8th Doctor audio stories, just because we're going to go see him again in, like, less than 2 weeks.
Are you going to get your autograph this time?
It depends. I mean, probably. What, it's like $20 or whatever?
No, it's like 40.
It's like 40? Oh, my God.
Well, it is one of the Doctors.
I guess that's true. Okay, I can probably shell out 40 for it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's 35 for the autograph, 5 if you want to get it on a picture that of they provide.
A pic. Yeah, well, that's what I would want that.
Yeah.
Because I'd probably frame it. And he's the only doctor that's going to be there, right? Because last year we got 6 and 8.
Yeah, and I was ecstatic. This year I was kind of hoping Sylvester McCoy would show up because he always seems like he has a lot of fun at these cons.
Mm-hmm.
He's always just having a blast. And I'm kind of sad because I have no problem Paul McGann coming back, but I think to make up for it, having Carol Ann Ford, the granddaughter of the doctor from the original series, she's going to be there. I feel like that's worth it, in my opinion.
I wonder how much her autograph is going to be.
Probably going to be about 40 also, I'm assuming.
Damn.
I'm still doing it. I don't know. I'm still debating who I want to have a picture with.
Yeah. I want to have a picture with Paul McGann, but how much is that?
Like, well, I got the picture last year with the 6th and the 8th doctors together, and that was 55.
I bet if it's just him, it's probably like 40.
Something like that, probably. All right, we got a lot to go into, so let's get right into Last Week on TV with Supergirl Pilot.
Woo!
So,
na, 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 na.
The only other on-screen adaptation of Supergirl on TV wasn't that just on Smallville?
That I know about, yeah.
Because I know there was the Supergirl movie, which I have never watched, and I really have no plans on watching because it looks bad. But this version of Supergirl, I guess initial thoughts for me, it's not bad. It works. I wouldn't say it's the most solid thing in the world. I think they made a couple missteps with the pilot. But ultimately, like I remember when the ads came on for it originally, and it was like very Devil Wears Prada-esque feel.
Yeah.
Like half and half. Devil Wears Prada meets action. And I'm like, this is not going to work. Mm-mm. It looks bad. And then the pilot came out, which, again, we said we watched the leaked pilot months ago. It actually wasn't that terrible. Like, it was actually like an okay stepping off point.
Yeah. I agree. When I was, the trailer did it no justice. They did like a 7 minute like sneak peek. And it just felt, that's exactly what it felt like. The Devil Wears Prada with superpowers. And then you watch the trailer, and it's actually pretty good, but you can still definitely tell that the target audience is like teenage girls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or like preteen to teenage girls. I guess they're trying to get more of that audience into the superhero genre so that way they can make more money off of the other stuff, so that way they'll want to go see Superman versus Batman and stuff like that, and like Suicide Squad and Deadpool and stuff like that.
Right. And I certainly have no problem with them pulling a stunt like this to have that demographic.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that is a demographic that we need to reach out to. Because, let's face it, it's mostly going to be teenage boys and adult fanboys of the comics.
Yeah.
And the girl genre, not saying that they can't enjoy the same shows because of the drama and the romance in the other shows, but with this, you really do have a unique viewing audience, and I'm okay with that. I would like to see them structure it up a little bit better and a little bit less girl power.
Yeah, well, but it does make her seem, it does make Kara seem a lot more human, though.
Yeah, yeah,
which I like that part, because then it's a lot more relatable. And it's kind of like Gossip Girl. Like, girls are going to want to watch it because it's like, yeah, she's human. It's not like a weird, oh, it's like weird comic booky alien thing, superpowers, and it's nerdy. It's like, nah. Yeah. And you can tell, like, they kind of know that a lot of girls are just like, eh, nerd. Like, we're not going to watch that.
Well, I'm also kind of curious as far as, like, I didn't see who wrote the pilot. So I don't know if there was a female writer on it. But if this was an all-male written story, then again, and I think this is going to be part of the issue with the show, is that if it is an all-male written show, then you are getting the male's standpoint of the female mind, which to me is what spoke to me in that, watching it as a man. I was like, okay, they're saying that, okay, she concentrates on the relationship, and she concentrates on this. We get the action part, but she's mostly focused on, oh my God, James Olsen. Oh my God, he's so dreamy. You know?
And he's black. I'm not trying to be racist or anything. But Jimmy Olsen is not supposed to be black.
Jimmy's a dork. He's meant to be a dork, a little stumble.
He's supposed to be a dorky little white dude with bow tie. And he's like this big, tall, smooth black man.
Like, how's it going?
He's like, hey, ladies.
Hey, Kara.
Name's James.
I'm here to help you, baby. Don't worry. I got you. We'll say the word together.
Yeah, she just like melts in her panties every time she sees him.
And let's face it. That is in the old stories. It's the same with the original Supergirl movie. Jimmy Olsen is in there. And they do have a budding relationship. And it's the same in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're still playing up on that. But I think changing it like that, not that that's a bad thing, it's just, it's kind of jarring when you have a personality archetype the way you already know him. And by changing it up to be this confident, smooth black man, it's like, oh, all right, I'll go with it. But
I think they're just doing that to attract the female demographic.
Yeah.
That's probably the only reason why.
And you know what?
There needs to be a love interest. They need to have like a hot dude that the chicks are going to want to watch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, and you know, I have a couple friends who are black, and they've talked to me before, and I forget how we got on the topic, but I said to them, I'm like, "You guys get like all the chicks. What do you do?" And they're like, "Corey, you just got to be black. just be black. It'll get women." I'm like, "Well, I'll see what I can do about that." but as far as this episode goes, you know, like the graphics are okay. The whole setup is fine. I do not like narration. I hate narration. If you want to tell a story, if you do narration, you are getting a story from outside looking in. And really, as a viewer, you need to be going on the journey with the person. And that's why narration in a pilot, I get it, but at the same time, it's kind of jarring, and I do not like that. Like, my name is Kara, and I did this, and here's why you are watching this.
It's like, okay, it seems like a sixth grader wrote a paragraph, and we're reading it.
Yeah, and even with the other CW shows, like with the Flash and Arrow, they all have that kind of intro, like, my name is Oliver Queen, or my name is Barry Allen. And they have that, but it's not technically part of the show. It's in front of it.
Yeah, it's just the intro. It's just, you know, the intro sequence with the theme music and the montage.
And again, if you think about that, going to comics kind of have that.
It's they
like,
do.
Every once in a while they'll say, my name is Barry Allen and I'm the Flash and here's why. So I'm not in all against it, but as far as the narration for the pilot, it felt very jarring.
They could have just explained it through events.
Yeah, exactly. And then some of the acting was kind of off, in my opinion, like Kara's mom. She's like, Krypton's exploding around her, and she looks and she's like, I love you, Kara. It was just very blank, very dead stare. I love you.
I'm not afraid at all.
It's like,
get in the ship, leave.
Did they use her first take or something? Oh, that's perfect. Let's use it.
I don't know.
We're on a budget.
Yeah, they were probably like, we're not paying her that much.
But like I said, it's good to see a female superhero. You know, we have been lacking in that area, and I think it's good to see it. And there's potential crossovers because this is also Greg Berlanti Productions, who produced Arrow and The Flash. So we may be getting some crossover episodes, even though they're on different networks.
Mm-hmm.
Supergirl's on CBS, and the others are on CW, which, you know, is fine. But I don't know. I think there might be a good future ahead.
Yeah. I can see this show being my guilty pleasure. I gotta say, the special effects and stuff were really, really amazing for being, number one, being the pilot, and number two, a TV show in general.
Yeah.
The special effects are amazing, and like the fighting sequences and stuff were pretty cool.
Yeah. But even then, like, with the whole setup of the show, at least as for the pilot goes, it's kind of annoying to me that it's pretty much the Superman story, just with women. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the whole setup and everything.
It's very true. And somebody's coming in the house. Wait a second.
Someone's coming in my door. Hello? Yes?
Oh, it's mom.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother says that she needs the saw out of my garage. Okay. Mom, you're ruining my podcast. Stop it. I'm going to look like such a dweeb.
No, remember in Pixels, he was like, Mom! I'm trying to save the world!
All right. Hold on a minute, everybody. We have a moment of technical difficulties. We'll be right back.
Right. Bye, Mom.
Bye, Mom. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway.
That was quite unexpected.
Very unexpected, but that was good. It was you get a peek into our lives, people. And it's not as exciting as you thought it would be. It's fine.
Yeah.
So I think we were done with Supergirl anyway. So let's get right into the news. So we got a lot of news stories this week. Also, we're catching up from last week. So let's see what we got on here. So apparently, the Blue Beetle film, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, actor Alan Tudyk, who, if you remember in Firefly, Nathan Fillion was Captain Malcolm Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
and Alan Tudyk played Wash.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So he was told that he would... people were asking him if he was going to be portraying Booster Gold's counterpart, Blue Beetle. And he said, if it's working with Nathan Fillion, if Nathan Fillion does get the role of Booster Gold, he's like, I'm in. Which I'm just like,
wow,
let's do it.
I could picture Nathan Fillion being Booster Gold.
Yes. Yes, hands down. Because I remember, you remember the big thing for him being Green Lantern? There was people like protesting and making big, what do they call them online?
Petitions.
Petitions. How did that word escape my brain there?
I was going to say, I wouldn't have been able to tell you if I would have known about this happening, but I didn't know this even happened.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm totally down. I loved Firefly. I loved the show, and to see them together would be fantastic.
I saw the pilot a long, long time ago, and I never finished watching the rest of it because, I don't know, I don't think I was very impressed with it, honestly. Or maybe there was a different show I would have rather been watching at the time. I can't really tell you, because I think it was like 4 years ago or longer.
Yeah.
But,
you know, before Smallville, before Doctor Who and any of that, that was like my favorite show. And it was only one season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame, really.
I'm going to have to give it a shot. It's on Netflix still, I think.
Yeah, I think it's still there. I also have it, you know. You can always borrow it from me. So apparently Jared Leto actually got on the cover of Empire magazine as his Joker. There were other covers for the other characters as well. But the Joker one was one people most talk about. So I'm bringing it up for Jacob right now, and let's give our initial thoughts here. So let's see here.
Never even heard of Empire magazine.
To be perfectly honest, I'm really not familiar with it either. But
it's, why is he wearing like sweatpants?
Well, this is supposed to be his actual getup. This is his actual costume from him being in Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
So I think those are like inmate pants.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to describe, if you haven't seen it, everybody, he's standing there. He has a cane. He has a long purple, more or less like a rain trench coat almost. But it looks
kind of like leather, like scaly, yeah. Like crocodile skin or something.
Maybe that's a little bit of a nod to Killer Croc. Who knows? But he has his getup. It looks like he's walking barefoot. Or maybe like some kind of socks. I'm not sure exactly, but...
It could be like those like prison slip-ons.
Yeah. But he's got that getup. And overall, I actually kind of like the look, because with the coat, it kind of makes him look like that... not like the King Joker, but he almost like he I guess he just kind of represents like that king of crime.
Yeah, like he's even, the boss.
And he, at the same time, he really doesn't look like much.
Mm-mm.
And that's what makes that, I think that's such a good effect.
Okay. See, I had to look closely. I thought he was wearing like a medallion or something, like a necklace, but that's just a tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is good.
And the tattoos are still there. And, you know, I don't. I remember when everybody saw the picture of the tats and they were like, I don't think I like this. And I don't know. I'm still kind of on the fence with it, and I'd like to see where they go with it, or if it has like a real meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Because I remember the smile that was on his arm. Can you just imagine like get him getting beat up by Batman and then just wipes away his blood and there's the smile when he wipes his blood?
Yeah.
Like how cool would that be to see visually? But ultimately, it's a good cover. And I think the costume actually pulls it off. I'm still kind of concerned, though, about what his Joker is going to be like. I don't know if this is going to be... Because they've already... The producers have come out and said his Joker is very unique.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy with that. I'm happy to see another actor's take on it. But I'm still scared. Is this going to be more reminiscent of the animated series Joker? Because that's what it looks like to me.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it's a very... different scenario.
Yeah, I mean, from what I heard, it seemed like they were going to make him more of like a gangster sort of thing. Like, but like, well, kind of like a gangster, but I'm not talking about like mafia gangster, like, I don't know. But yeah, they were going to make him a little bit less like loony, crazy, like psychopath. And just make him more, like, modern. Like, I mean, like, he wears a grill.
Right.
So it's kind of like...
very unusual.
They're making him not... Yeah, okay, so when I say gangster, they're making him more like gangster rapper.
Gangsta.
Yeah, like gangsta
killer.
Gangsta Joker.
Gangsta Joker.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because he's got all the tattoos and... like, his makeup is on point.
Yes, yes. I mean, even looking at him, it's just, I don't see Jared Leto. I actually see the Joker. Mm-hmm. And that's what the effect I want. Like, when Heath Ledger became the Joker, mm-hmm. I never saw Heath Ledger at any point in the movie. I saw the Joker. Mm-hmm. And that's what I know we want out of Suicide Squad as well. So, yeah, good cover. Apparently, there was a canceled video game that was solely centered around Darth Maul. Back when the Phantom Menace was still in development. Let me rephrase that. Apparently in 2010, there was this company called Red Fly Studios, and they were pitched to make this Darth Maul game, and they started working on it, but it was canceled. Now, they are considering at EA Games of taking it over and starting it over. And apparently, the word is, if they do start this, the combat would be very Arkham Knight-centric. Or the Arkham Asylum series, which I am 100% down with, because how cool would that be to be fighting around with that kind of combat system with a dual blade lightsaber?
That would be amazing.
Is that all you have to add? You're just like, amazing. Brilliant.
Excellent idea.
So I'm excited, and I'm sure if Kurt was here, he'd be like, I really love it.
I don't know. I don't get too excited about games too much anymore, because I just like to stick to the... retro ones. I don't know.
Oh yeah, I don't blame you.
The new stuff coming out, like the only thing that I'm really excited for coming out is Black Ops 3. And I don't even have a console to play it on.
Not Battlefront? You're not excited for that? Oh, you didn't play the beta either.
No, I didn't. But I mean, the gameplay did look amazing. I do want to play Battlefront, but at the same time, I'm lacking a console and I don't know which console I want to get. You already have the PS4. Kurt says he's getting a PS4 apparently.
He has one,
doesn't
he?
Or doesn't he have one?
He has one, and he has an Xbox One now.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
See, I don't know if I want the Xbox One or not, because the Xbox One has better games.
It's debatable. Let's move on with another piece of news here with the producer of the newest of what will be the newest of the Indiana Jones franchise, Frank Marshall. He has come out and said, we are not doing the James Bond thing where we're going to call somebody else Indiana Jones. I think that's a terrible mistake. Do not give us Harrison Ford again. It is done. He's finished. I mean, even as Han Solo, I'm happy he's back, but he's not going to be sticking around long.
Mm-mm.
Even I know that. He was the one who even said back when Episode 5 was being made, when they froze him in carbonite, he said, kill him off. He's a character. He doesn't need to be around. Kill him off.
Yeah.
But then Lucas had his way and brought him back for Episode 6. So he's here again. It's like even Harrison Ford said, you know, I'm enjoying being back. Don't get me wrong. But even then, I'm sure in the back of his mind, he's like, kill him off.
Yeah. Maybe they do. Maybe he does die.
I don't know.
We don't know.
I mean,
he's old man.
Well, you saw in the trailer, Daisy Ridley's character, Ray, was crying over somebody at one point. And mm-hmm. you can't really tell. I saw an ear. I don't think it was Han Solo. To me, it looked like Princess Leia, which I'd be like, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. So we have in Gotham now, we got our cast up list for Mr. Freeze and Nora Freeze. Kristen Hegger, who used to be on Being Human, I have never watched that show, but she was cast as Nora Freeze. So I'm sure we'll get to see her like pre-disease. But Mr. Freeze, I'm sorry. I'm all over the place with this right now. Mr. Freeze was also cast, but I have wrote down here the weirdest casting for Hugo Strange was B.D. Wong.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know who that is?
Wasn't that like the mad scientist in Jurassic World?
Yes, it was. I'm surprised you remember that. Because I don't think he's a name that most people associate with like just different things in their pop culture mind. But B.D. Wong cast as Hugo Strange. I'm really concerned and excited at the same time. Because he is an Asian actor. But I don't know.
I don't really have much to say about that. I mean,
well, have you watched Law and Order SVU? Never watched that?
No, I don't watch that crap.
That's not crap. It's a fun show.
It's probably crap. Which one's the one that has iced tea in it?
SVU.
All right. I've seen a couple episodes.
Okay, there you go.
But it's not like I really was enjoying myself. It was just on.
Yeah. You're just kind of bored. Just kind of sat around.
Well, the one time I was at Sierra's house, and she just had it on the TV, and I wasn't even in the room. I was just in the dining room, and I was like, is that Law and Order on? Because I hear Ice-T talking. And that's the only reason why I knew it was Law and Order, because I know he's in Law and Order, and I'm like, there's nothing else he would be in on TV right now.
Except for Ice-T and Coco.
Yeah, but I don't even think they play that anymore.
The groundbreaking reality series on E! Network. Because that is a network that everybody just needs to sit down and watch.
I hate that network. Horrible.
So, another thing with this, the Batman standalone movie coming up. I know there was rumor going around that Ben Affleck was going to co-write, direct, and star in. And I think that's still maybe happening. But now the rumored standalone story for that movie is going to be about Red Hood. And I'm not surprised. Because that is a fantastic story. There was a tease in the trailer for Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
With ha 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 and you let your family die. It's like that alone right there is a nod to Death in the Family, the 1988 storyline with the Red Hood. And Under the Red Hood animated movie is one of the best ones made to date.
That one is really good.
And then you have the Arkham Knight thing, which, sorry everybody, spoilers if you didn't play it. You should have played it by now if you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
But... you know, Arkham Knight being the Red Hood was, I don't know. They changed it.
We kind of saw it coming.
And that's the sad thing. I think the story-wise, while the story was the focus, the story was also predictable. So with the movie, I hope we get something really special out of it. Something that really sets it apart from everything else in the franchises.
Indeed.
Jacob's thoughts today are all just like either single word or one phrase responses. I tell him and I tell Kurt all the time, let's expound on it. If you have something to say, like just really make it nice in detail because the listeners are gonna want to hear our long winded thoughts. And then Jacob's like, yeah. That makes me think of the Dragon Ball PP. He's like, dude, are you gay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob, I appreciate having you here either way.
I just that's all I had to say. Told me to say what I had to say. That was it.
Well, hopefully you have a lot more to say about our movie review, which now, we're getting into.
Yes, that's what I've been waiting for.
Let's get into the Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
The sheep bend nut. It's impossible to break.
Pretty handy.
I'm a scout.
Like an actual scout?
Yeah.
You know, tonight's the secret party, right? Everybody except the douchebags and the neckerchiefs will be going. This could be the night of our lives.
Wait, you're the stripper!
Cocktail waitress.
So, what do you think?
About what?
The movie. Out of five.
Out of five. Man, I don't know. I don't particularly go to the theater to see comedies.
Me neither.
Because they're not my type of movie. I mean, yeah, I enjoy them every once in a while when I'm bored, but I'd rather watch like a horror film or like comic book action sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't. I'm trying not to be biased, but I'm probably gonna say like 3.5.
Really? I honestly thought that was a little higher than I thought you would be giving it.
I enjoyed myself. Like, if we're going based off of how much I enjoyed myself, I got to say 3.5. But there were also some things about the film that I was just kind of like, really? Like, just some really stupid stuff that just didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm going to be giving it a 3 out of 5 because, like you said, I enjoyed myself. I was entertained. But at the same time, I was also like, there's things in here that could be really fixed up plot-wise, and, you know, it's like you were saying before we started recording, you said if you go into this just to enjoy yourself and you don't think about it, mind-numbing action, mind-numbing comedy, it's like, yeah, it's funny, and it's fun, and that's all it's really meant to be.
Yeah.
And I'd like to point out that this is rated R for pretty darn graphic stuff.
Yeah, just so if you go try to see the movie, just go into it expecting to laugh and just don't think about anything too hard, because if you pay attention to it too much and you think about it more than just the jokes, you're not going to like it.
Yeah, it ultimately is, in my opinion, before I even went to see this, I saw from the trailer, I'm like, this is Super Bad meets Zombieland quite easily. So let's go down what the plot is all about, and then we can go from there. So I thought the opening of the movie with the guy from Workaholics, right off the bat, is exactly the tone that the film was going for, and it was exactly what I was like, this is what I want.
I loved it.
What was he mouthing? What was he singing?
He was singing the song Black Widow by Iggy Azalea.
Yeah. He was all into it. And, you know, it's funny because I've seen Workaholics before, and I love that show, but at the same time, I don't have cable. Mm-hmm. So I have to, like, go and find it in other means, and I'm like, I want to watch more Workaholics. So I wonder if it's on Netflix. I don't know if it is or not.
The opening scene was hilarious.
And then you go into, you actually meet the scouts and everything, and you have like the funny training video, which was on VHS. And having moments like that where you record on VHS is like, okay, you're already telling from the outset that this is a low-grade group. They don't have good film quality, and it's shot and edited terribly.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt was like exactly what was needed. And at the same time, having it on VHS is funny alone, because it's like, it's so dated nowadays. And then you go into the characters. As far as the characters go, I'm not even going to name names, because I didn't really care enough about any of the characters. I didn't really care enough about the actors. Like, I don't think any of them were really that impressive. The guy who played Augie, though, this was his first film ever. And I was actually, like, his character I thought was, in my opinion, probably the highlight, because he was the one I was least annoyed with.
Mm-hmm.
The douchebag friend was inconsistent, in my opinion. He was more worried about getting laid and more worried about his popularity status.
Yeah.
And even when guys were telling him, like, dude, the deer went, he's like, who cares about the deer? It's like, dude, you need to sit and think about it. Take the time. Don't quit. Like,
no, he just had, like, I think that was his character, though. He had like a one track mind. He was only worried about getting laid and going to parties and hanging out with chicks and
it's very
stuff like that.
Yeah, it's very stereotypical as far as high schooler boys go, because
and that was annoying.
Like, and don't get me wrong, I think at the same time, that kind of character is appropriate, but when you go too stereotypical, it just becomes annoying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, balance it out a little bit, I think. And I mean, don't get me wrong, the jokes paid off later, such as the cop, where she just goes fully breasted when her shirt gets caught in
they're sitting up front of the liquor store trying to pay this homeless guy to go get him beer to go to this party, and a police officer comes walking out, and she's got a big old chest on her. And then later in the film, you see her as a zombie, and her shirt gets caught in the gate, and she keeps trying to run at him, but her shirt's caught, and then her shirt rips open, and her titties are just hanging out, and damn, like, just damn.
And it goes into this slow motion going, oh.
my God. Yeah. And he's just standing there looking at him, and the music in the background is like, and he's like, and his eyes are like freaking huge. And they're like, dude, come on, we gotta go. And then he just runs up and grabs him and starts squeezing him.
Just like real quick.
Yeah, he's
like, oh my God, I touched them.
And then ran away.
And it's like I said, I think as far as a joke, it does pay off, but the character itself still just got a little bit too annoying, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And like I said, he was inconsistent, so he should have taken like some moments much more seriously. But even the main character, who I actually thought was a well-developed character. He was, he starts out being this very unsure of himself because he's a scout, and he likes being in scouts, but he's afraid of what people think about him.
Yeah, and he's just, like, self-conscious and lacks the initiative to make the step with the girl that he likes.
Right. And, I mean, let's face it, this character is what, 16, 17? He's a sophomore in high school?
They're supposed to be 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair because, I was 16. I didn't know what I wanted or how to be aggressive. You don't appreciate that stuff until you get older. So as a film in relating to the character, I could easily relate to that kind of character. But as far as like the group altogether, I more or less was okay with the group of scouts. I was fine with this group. I just think as far as any one of them standing out to the point where I was like, wow, that was the highlight of the film in these characters, Augie was probably the most, but at the same time, it was just like, I don't really care about these guys that much. But, it was enough to get through the film. You also have the character of Denise, who comes up, and she's like the archetypal or the stereotyped of, she's the hot chick that works at the stripper joint, and she's the stripper girl, and she wasn't a stripper. She points out that she was a barmaid or a cocktail waitress.
Cocktail waitress.
And again, this is where it's playing up on the fantasy of the writing for high schoolers. What?
You said barmaid.
Wait.
You just said, just barmaid, Corey. Like, what year are we in?
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that. The word just popped in my mind. I just kind of went with it. Hello, boys. You want to come in here for some drinks? But, she in the writing was the archetypal... like what every boy's dream is to be around the hot chick that works at the stripper joint. She is a babe. She is very gorgeous. And her character at the same time, and this is one of the issues Jacob and I had, which was one of the most unrealistic things in the film, more so than zombies attacking. I can believe zombies would attack.
Mm-hmm.
I can never believe that a 20, 21-year-old girl...
She had to be at least 21, because you can't... I don't think you can work in a strip club unless you're 21.
But this is the most unbelievable thing, that she actually said to a 16-year-old, here, kiss me, because I need to teach you how to be aggressive. No! That doesn't even happen No!
Yeah.
That never happens. That is a dream. That's what that sequence was. It was a complete and utter dream. That didn't happen in the movie.
I'm 21, and I work with a couple of 16-year-olds. I would not go near them with my mouth or my penis or anything. I wouldn't go near them.
But, like, I can understand if the character was trying to teach her or she was trying to teach him aggressiveness, and that's fine. It would have worked better, even though I didn't believe it would happen, it would have worked better if I would have understood her character and what her motive was to really help him. But at the end of the day, none of that happened in the film. So at the end of the day, her character to me is just a dream.
Yeah.
She doesn't exist.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, there's no women out there that would ever do anything like that. Even, like, me growing up in high school, Sure, we all dream about it.
I mean, when I was 16, I'm sitting there, I'm like, ooh, that girl's older, hot. Now I work at a grocery store, and I'm like, hey, that lady's like 40, and she's got 3 kids. She's hot.
However, for some reason, it does happen with teachers and 16-year-old boys.
Oh, yeah.
That happens a lot. So I guess they do exist, but not in a good way. I mean, good for young boys, I guess. I don't know.
It seemed like she was just trying to do him a favor, but at the same time,
it's creepy.
Like, really?
It's very creepy.
It's kind of, yeah. She's like, well, kiss me.
Whatever.
Just kiss me. And then they like smacked foreheads when he went in for it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is such a goober.
It's getting worse.
I have never done that.
Yeah, exactly. Ever. That doesn't happen. It's like you meet mouths. You're not meeting foreheads. Are you trying to meet foreheads? That's the only way that would happen.
God.
So let's get back into the plot. I wanted to make sure we talk about the characters, and as well as David Kushner, who played the Scoutmaster.
So funny.
He was okay. I'm gonna change my vote. He was the highlight. He was very funny, even though he wasn't a main character. He just kept dying, and he still kept staying alive.
He was like a zombie the whole time. They kept hitting him with the car and like lighting him on fire and beating the crap out of him, and he was still alive. They blew him up with a grenade at the end,
yeah,
and he was still alive. Like, his head was still moving. That part kind of pissed me off, though.
A little bit, but yeah, because they didn't have to drive through him. They drove around him. They could have driven around him, but they didn't. They just hit him. It's like, you have a car. You need to go to safety. Don't.
It didn't mess the car up.
Yeah. Same with the deer.
What are we talking about now? Because I would rather wait till the end to just like rip the movie apart.
Okay.
It's about the parts that I don't like.
Okay. Well, then let's go into other points. The scenes where they had like, they were trying to change the tire, or they were going into Home Depot over the third act, or True Value, I'm sorry. They go and they have these scenes where they're being scouts are paying off.
Yeah.
And I did like that. I'm glad they played up on that a little bit. Although, being scouts, they have some moments where they don't use logic, such as, and I'm sure you were going to rip this part apart here, but when they don't lock the house when they go into to find the girl's journal.
Oh, my God.
That's just a no. No, you lock the door. I don't even care if it's a glass door.
I don't even care if there's zombies afoot or not. When you walk in the house, you lock the door behind you.
Exactly.
Who doesn't do that?
People in a movie, in order to set up plot. That's the only way. You also eventually meet, when they're in the middle of their traveling, you meet this military man who comes up out of nowhere and saves the day. And I was thinking to myself, oh, cool, we get this like interesting character to come in and be part of this group. And then he's thrown away for cheap zombie laughs.
Yeah.
And I thought that could have been something really good and really special.
I thought he was going to run around and help them and kick ass. Like, that would have been cool.
Because when he first showed up, he showed up like this badass way. I'm like, all right, we got a badass character adding to the mix. And then he's thrown away. I'm like that was a waste. That was a waste. And I think that's going to be the issue here is, like, it's a comedy film, so I get they're doing things for cheap laughs, but at the same time, they're throwing away good elements that could have been a good payoff. So ultimately, I really have nothing else to add except for the final act, which is exactly what you expect. Fun zombie killing, you know, just all around mind-numbing action. Again, very graphic, but I did like where Augie shoots the cannon with the ball. It goes through three zombie heads in slow motion. The guys look at him like, what the heck did you just do? And he looks at him and goes, boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was the reason was hilarious. I loved his character so much. He just went in with it. But, you know, it's very archetypal structure set up, like, oh, now I'm confident. I'm going to go save the girl that I'm in love with. And, you know, ultimately, like I was telling Jacob, it pays off as a structured story. It's decent. It's not that bad, but there was a lot of unused elements that could have made it up for being a lot better. Even with like the third act scene where they make up and, you know, they're like, oh, we're about to die, so I guess I better get all my problems out and solve the problem now. And this is my niche from watching movies and paying off in the third act the emotional story. You can do a scene where you stand and say, here's why we're friends, here's why I was wrong, here's why you guys were wrong, let's make up. That's fine. And I'm okay with it. But there's other ways to get across to the audience how a problem is solved emotionally. You can do it through actions. You don't have to do it through just plain out words. To me, that's very, like, I didn't go to film school. I didn't go to college or anything like that. So I really don't have a place to say, like, I have experience or something here. But just off of watching films, it seemed to me that this writing, and I looked up the writers, and they were all much older. I don't know if they are recent college graduates, but it felt like a very college graduate type writing. Like, they just got lucky.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm mostly just, like, talking about the parts I didn't like about movies.
You know what? And you know what? You guys are all probably tired of listening to me go through it. So let's go over to Jacob, because he hasn't had a whole lot to say today. That's fine. But let's give him what he wants to really do. Nitpick the crap out of something. So let's go to nitpicks with Jacob.
Okay, so the first thing that really bothered me in the beginning was when they're driving. Okay, never mind. That's not the first thing. The first thing that really bothered me was the very opening sequence when the dude from Workaholics is singing the song, and then he goes into the lab and he finds the zombie guy laying on the table. When the zombie guy wakes up and starts attacking him, he doesn't try to, like, bite him or anything right away. He's, like, grabbing him and throwing him around the lab. What zombie have you ever seen wants to, like, beat you up first before they try and eat you?
And actually, that's something I forgot to mention. When the way the zombies are portrayed in this film, it's almost comes off like there's a bit of intelligence behind it. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I never would know a zombie that would throw before they go and eat.
Yeah.
But we have the zombie stripper scene near to the second act of the film, where she comes out, she does a striptease show, and then she starts going after them. It doesn't make any sense, because why would she come out there and do that if she wasn't a zombie? Or if she was a zombie, why would she do that? There's no reason. It was there for cheap laughs, and that's fine. Because like we said, if you take it seriously, you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, and the whole time I'm sitting there taking it seriously, and yeah, the parts were still funny, but it's still kind of like, what the hell? Because that part was funny in the beginning, when, like, the doctor is, like, out, like, right outside the window, trying to get a bag of chips out of the vending machine, and you see the janitor just being thrown across the room behind him, and he has, like, no idea what's going on. Yeah, it was funny, but a zombie would not do that. A zombie would just try to eat you, and then that would be it, and you'd be done. And so that kind of upset me, but it was still funny. Then they hit the deer, and the deer was a zombie because it just got up and walked away. You didn't see it get up and walk away, but you just kind of assume that would happen because they turn around and it's gone. But when they hit the deer with the car, there was nothing wrong with the car whatsoever. It didn't crack the windshield, it didn't dent the bumper or the hood or take a light out or a mirror off or anything.
Instead,
they had to change the frickin' tire.
Which, of course, the deer was near the tire to poke it.
Yeah. And I don't understand that part. And they didn't put the frickin' tire on right. And they only did that to set themselves up for the part they were out front of the liquor store when the zombies were coming.
Yeah.
And they tried to drive away and the damn tire fell off.
Yeah.
And they set it up on like that on purpose, just so that way they could have that little extra moment of like suspense, like, oh my God, are we going to be able to make it? Well, I'll tell you what, if there were zombies across the parking lot and they were that close, and they were even if they were walking towards you, there's no way you'd have been able to change the tire fast enough before they would show up. It was kind of like in 28 Days Later. How they were able to change, they were all in the tunnel and the rats were running and they were trying to change the tire, and they realized that the rats were running away from the infected, and they changed the tire real fast and drove away. And it's like, no,
don't do that.
Stop doing that dumb stuff, because it's like, if you would have put the damn thing on right in the first place, you're a friggin' scout. You don't know how to change a tire. You don't know how to change a tire.
Exactly. There was a woman in the theater that thought that was absolutely hilarious, though. Remember the tire fell off? She was having a grand old time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you laughing at, lady? That wasn't that funny.
Stupid America.
And that's also a thing that, with the writing, I'm like, this is definitely written for people that want the mind-numbing stuff and not for people like us, where we can enjoy both.
Mm-hmm.
It was meant for the mind-numbers.
And so that was another thing. Before that, they go into the strip club. I didn't like the stripper zombie. That didn't make any sense.
Right.
That was dumb. I hated how the cocktail waitress didn't come out and try and save them until she found out that there were people in there. Like, why weren't the stripper zombie and the bouncer zombie already dead if she was in there with a shotgun? They should have already been dead.
True story.
Instead of just making it like, oh my God, I'm about to die because I'm in the shitter and the bouncer guy is going to kill me right now. And then she just blows his head off. I'm like, they set it up so she could come save the day when in reality she shouldn't have had to save the day because they should have already been dead already. And when the one guy did kill the stripper zombie, he stabbed the bottle into her forehead.
Oh, that's right.
Which, first of all, you're not going to be able to get a glass bottle through her skull and into her brain. It's going to break. Secondly, a ton of blood came out of her forehead and went all over his face, got all in his mouth, in his eyes, everything, and he didn't change into a zombie. And that happened a couple times to him throughout the movie, and he never turned into a zombie.
You know, that's
true. It's like, do they physically have to bite you with their teeth in order for you to change, or what?
I never even thought about that. That was definitely there for a joke. And even then, yeah. I thought to myself, the logic of that part, I was thinking to myself, there's bone in front of that spot. There's no way the bottle broke the bone enough where all that blood can come gushing out. There's no way. I mean, it was there for a cheap laugh. And what did it pay off? Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah.
But there's no way it was logically sound. But yeah, I never even thought about that. That character does not change at all. Mm-hmm. So the logic for zombies in this film really doesn't have like a serious logic to it. It's meant to be there just for laughs.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's not necessarily a problem, you know. It can just be there for jokes as long as you have it set up that way. So when you go into this film, you need to ignore everything you know about zombies pretty much.
Yeah, because there's a lot of times that you'll see where you just think, like, that was a perfect opportunity for the zombie to grab him and eat him, but it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And this is kind of made me mad.
You know, I'm thinking to myself, you would be perfect at CinemaSins. We should give Jeremy a call.
Yeah.
We'll let him know, hey, hire this guy. He's pretty good at it.
Another thing, though, is they hit the Scoutmaster with the car. They didn't even have to hit him with the car. And when they did hit him with the car, it still didn't do anything to the car.
Yeah.
At all.
Yep.
And yes, okay, it was funny the fact that he kept coming back, but it's like, how did he even know where they were?
Yeah.
He's a zombie. Like, okay. And the other thing was, Augie was in his house. I know he only got in because the door was open, but why was the frickin' door open when he wasn't even at home when he turned?
Uh-huh.
It's not like he left the door open and a zombie came in and turned him, and then they left the house.
Right.
He was out on the trail, so it's like, what sense does it make for him to have his door hanging wide open? He's the scout leader. He would not just leave the house and leave his door open.
Right.
And then, so he goes in the house, he's sitting there taking a dump, and the scoutmaster, somehow, now that he's zombified, remembers how to get back to his house.
Yeah.
And he walks to his house, and then they just set that whole thing up for laughs. It's like, no, he's not going to go back to his house. He's a zombie. He's just going to walk around until he finds something to eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he keeps showing up. Like, he's following them. Like, he knows where they are. It's like, I wouldn't even know where they went.
Yeah.
And I'm not a zombie.
Anyway,
it's just, if you think about it too much, it just makes it not a good movie.
And that's the problem for Jacob right now. Yeah. He's thinking about it a lot. And I understand. That's what Jacob likes to do. He likes to nitpick. That's why we have him here.
So, you know, just don't take it seriously. Pretty much any movie. Just don't even take any movie seriously anymore, because they're all just horrible at this point.
Somewhere along the line in the history of making films, we forgot how to make a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad thing. It's really sad because we stay focused on jokes and visuals. And that's the problem. I think it was George Lucas who said back in the early 80s, he said, you know, special effects are a means to make a film. They're a tool. They're not a place for good storytelling. And then he made the prequels. And
he just crapped all over his statement.
Yeah, he did. It's a sad, sad truth. But yeah, ultimately, final thought here. The film, funny. Don't take it seriously, like Jacob said. And ultimately, I think you'll have a fun time. But again, be warned, it's one of those crude graphic movies. And
yeah.
I don't see myself going back to watch this again, but good fun. And
I was kind of hoping it would be more like Zombieland because they said it was the Scout's Guide. I didn't receive any guide to the zombie apocalypse whatsoever.
The original title of the film was supposed to be called Scouts versus Zombies.
So that would have made more sense.
It would have been. It would have been a lot better. But the, like Zombieland, you got more of a guide. This one, you don't.
Yeah. They gave you rules to abide by.
Right.
This one, none of that. And that's what I thought. I thought we were going to get that. And I thought it was going to be cool because of that.
Yeah.
But no. They let me down.
All right, so I think that's everything we needed to say about the movie. So let's get right into Ask the Nerds. And we do have a question from a friend of mine, Ashley White. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you for giving us a question.
Thanks, Ashley.
She gave us a very interesting what-if scenario. She asks us, what if Bruce Wayne was the Joker? What if he had unlimited access, like Bruce Wayne does, to whatever resources he needed and a ridiculous amount of money? What kind of city would Gotham be? It's a very interesting scenario. I think that's one of those... that should be posed for an animated universe movie.
Earth 2.
I could... Oh, man. Just imagine the mayhem, the chaos he can... Like, just wreak.
I'm kind of confused at what the question is, though.
Like, okay, just picture Bruce Wayne was the Joker instead of being Batman. Like, okay. Like instead of Batman, it is the Joker. And Bruce Wayne
is the
Joker.
How do I think Gotham would end up... Well, I feel like he would be the king of Gotham. Like, there wouldn't be any Gotham anymore.
Yeah, it would just be chaos.
That's exactly how it would be if he had unlimited money and unlimited resources, like, and he had the mindset of the Joker, or was the Joker.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be over.
Right. I think this scenario, though, would flip it on its head where instead of the Joker not having an origin story, or like the ones that we know as far as villains go, the Joker has always been more of that enigma of the representation of chaos and disorder. And if this story, if the rule is Bruce Wayne became the Joker, does that mean we would have the yin to the yang and we would have a Batman that has no origin and the Batman would go against the Joker? See, that would be interesting. I think it'd be kind of cool to see Batman more as the symbol of justice and not necessarily hope, but he's more the symbol of justice.
Or if the Joker is the good guy, except the universe is like flipped around backwards where like chaos is like good and Batman is actually the bad guy because he's trying to stop the Joker.
I like how we delve deeper into this. It makes it a lot more interesting. It goes from being a very simple question to like, holy crap, what if? I don't know where Kurt would be with this right now, but he's a fanboy of the Joker, so I don't blame him. The Joker's an awesome villain. But him, man, the thing about that, though, like, picture Batman as a bad guy. Like, well, I mean, he's already considered like a bad guy according to the police and everything. He's that vigilante that they don't want around.
Yeah.
But now it's become a point where he is the bad guy, but he wants to take down the actual bad injustice. So in this world, justice is bad.
Yes. Exactly.
Did everybody get all that? Because now I'm kind of confused. Oh my God, I just went cross-eyed.
Actually, why you do this?
I like that idea, though. I'd like to see an alternate universe storyline in comic. I'd like to see that done.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd have to set up the rules a lot better than what we just did, because I'm confused. But no, that was very interesting, and I think that's a fun thing to play with. That's like, well, what's that one comic that Kurt brought out in one of his From the Bin? It was Batman Europa, I think that's what it was called, where Batman and the Joker work together. That's a what-if scenario. So if we got another what-if scenario like that, that'd be kind of cool. All right. What do you say we end this show, Jacob?
Let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. Thank you all for listening with us and downloading us today. And you probably already know where to reach us because you got our episode. But if you do not, then here's how. You can follow us on Podomatic.com or through iTunes on the podcast app. Like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at JustNerdStuff1. Get involved. Give us comments. Give us suggestions because our show is shaped by you. or ask a question for our Ask the Nerds segments, just as Ashley White did. If we pick it, you'll get a shout-out. If you do use iTunes, do us a small favor. Give us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, don't forget to share our podcast with your friends, because we need to spread the nerdiness. Hey, Jacob.
Yeah.
It's time for the fun fact of the day. There is a law in Haiti that makes it a crime to turn someone into a zombie. This is an actual thing. Article 249, according to the Haiti law, states that if someone drugs another person, buries him as though he was dead, and then digs up the person and brings him back to life, it's still considered murder.
Wow.
Well, I think
or at least attempted murder, because they buried him alive.
But then, wait a minute. So wait, they do the murder, they bury them, but then how long does it have to be until they dig them back up and bring them back to life?
Yeah, I wonder if there's like a time limit.
And then when they do bring them back, and they do bring them back to life, was there ever any murder really involved? Because you just kind of canceled out your own murder.
Yeah, but they didn't really even kill them to begin with. They just drugged them and put them in a box and then buried them for like a day and then dug them back up and they're fine.
So it's like, where's the problem? It's like, oh no, they wake them back up and they're like, hey man, no hard feelings, right? No. No, we're fine. The law still says...
Can you imagine?
I don't even want to imagine. But I'm curious to attempt it now. Let's go drug somebody, Jacob. Let's go to Haiti and drug somebody. Let's see what happens.
They'll probably eat us.
Yeah, we don't need that. I like being alive and doing these podcasts. Hey, everybody. Since Kurt's not here, we'll say it for you. Stay nerdy, universe.